I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome back to Kinda Funny's Pixar in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every movie in the Pixar universe. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Just keep swimming, Tim.
I will. That's exactly what I plan to do. And I'm going to do it alongside. It's Christmas in July for a couple more days. Joey Noel.
Hello.
And rounding out the crew for today, because Andy Cortez is home in Texas, we have the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
I thought you were going to say you're going to just keep swimming with me, and I got excited. Now I'm sad.
Oh, well, I'll swim with you anytime, Kev. But you're too fast for me. You're out there. I'm fast.
He's more of a floater, Kevin.
I would say majestic.
Yeah. What I'd prefer to do is I like to be on the top of the water. Float back up or belly up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just kind of like every once in a while. I'll give
Tim,
one of
you
these
like
things.
You like flipping your brother into the water. That's what you like doing in the water.
Yeah, like just wrestling everybody.
Flips, yeah, wrestling in the water.
Backflips. Can you imagine, Nick? Can you imagine Tim Geddes doing a backflip in any capacity?
Are we doing a backflip off of a pier of some sort, or are you back arching your brother?
Back arching his brother.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't think I've ever even attempted a backflip. I've seen Kevin do it.
Backward swan. Flip.
Kevin literally, he's standing, jumps and flips, and it is one of those like, holy shit, how is this mass in the air looking this gorgeous right now? But anyway, that's a story.
It's a lot of fun. A story for another time.
Because this is Kinda Funny's In Review, where each and every week we rank and review and recap two different movie franchises. Right now, we're making up for lost time. We're backing up some Pixar In Reviews because we've been doing a whole bunch of other things, including Marvel. And next week, we're going back to DCEU with James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. And I could not be more excited for that. But you can get the show on youtube.com/kindafunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny In Review, and we'll be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, if you want to watch it live as it's being recorded, and if you want the exclusive post-show on the Kinda Funny podcast, you can go to patreon.com/kindafunny, just like our Patreon producers, Molecule has done. Thank you so much, Molecule, for supporting us. And because you supported us, you don't need to hear the ads that I'm going to tell you later about MeUndies, Canva, and Upstart. But for everyone else, let's get right to it. We are talking about Finding Dory with a runtime of 1 hour and 37 minutes. It was released on June 17th, 2016, making it the 17th Pixar movie. And Pixar's first PG-rated film to not contain death. Kind of a shocker. Didn't expect that. You know what I mean? I thought inevitably.
Wanted at least 10, 15 of these characters would be killed.
Yeah. This is the second Pixar film with no antagonist whatsoever, aside from minor little antagonists like the giant squid. The first film like that being last week's Inside Out. There was some controversy, though, around this release. Conservationists warned that very much like Finding Nemo, the film could lead to uninformed customers buying regal blue tang fish, Dory species. And this happened. A lot of people were buying these. That is a problem. that is a problem because blue tangs cannot be bred in captivity and have to be caught in the wild. They're related to surgeonfish and exhibit razor-sharp spines on both sides of the tail that can inflict formidable wounds. And so that was a whole issue.
Like people forgot the whole point of Finding Nemo. You know what I mean? Like that's what exactly it was made to prevent. Mm-hmm. So sad.
Mm-hmm. And then this was directed once again by Andrew Stanton. His film work includes co-writing and co-directing Pixar's A Bug's Life, directing Finding Nemo and the sequel Finding Dory, WALL-E, and the live action film Disney's John Carter in 2012.
Oh, I like John Carter. How dare you? Don't say it like that.
pissing. I also enjoy John Carter. It was a lot better than you think it was.
Yeah, you don't even know. You've never, you know what?
You've never seen John Carter, but I can't wait.
Do you want to say I do know because we had this exact same conversation last time I brought this up. But
hey, man, did you watch it all the way? Like, let's just be honest right now with the kids.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, I know exactly. So you can't talk. Great movie. This is like when Nick talks about Speed Racer.
John Carter in review, everyone. But he also co-wrote all four Toy Story films and Monsters, Inc. So this motherfucker, he's got the stuff, you know. When Nemo and Marlin are in the tidal pool exhibit, they meet a loquacious clam. Loquacious, word of the day, everyone. Voiced by the film's director, Andrew Stanton. When they ask the clam how he's doing, he enthusiastically responds, "I'm happy."
Happy as a clam.
There we go.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. The clam was weird though, because
it had a pearl in the mouth. Weird. And you were like, "This is weird. This pearl is in the mouth." Anyways, continue.
I mean, that's where clams usually have the pearl.
I know, but I was like, "How are you talking?"
Clams don't normally talk.
Mouth? Yeah, it's weird.
Mm. Yeah, but I feel like it was doing the same job as the uvula. You know, I mean, but like, just when you think about it, most fish don't normally talk.
This one's loquacious. The music is by Thomas Newman. Randy's cousin. He also did Finding Nemo and WALL-E. The budget of this was $200 million. Now, the last couple of movies, not necessarily up to Pixar's standards of making the box office back. But this one, ladies and gentlemen, $1.029 billion, becoming the second Pixar film to gross over $1 billion after Toy Story 3 and it was the third highest grossing film of 2016. It set numerous box office records, including the biggest opening for an animated film in North America and the highest grossing animated film in North America. As of July 17, 2016, the film displaced Shrek 2 to become the highest grossing animated film in American box office history.
Hell yeah.
But now a lot has changed. Things have happened since then, everyone. And worldwide, the animation game looking quite different. I thought this is a, I always like when there was like some crazy facts to go down. So I'm going to do that right now. At number 13, we have the original Finding Nemo at about $950 million. Going up from there, I am shocked to say that number 12 at $970 million, The Lion King.
Yeah.
Which used to be the de facto juggernaut of this thing. But no, how the mighty have fallen. Then number 11, we have Despicable Me 2. At number 10, we have Zootopia.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Only 10. Never seen. Wow. It's very good, Joey.
Only 10.
Zootopia is very good, and it did really right?
It's very good, but I didn't expect it to do
but that's what I'm saying.
It's above the Lion King. That's pretty huge, though.
Well, I'm shocked by Lion King, too. Yeah. Its placement being
You have to remember Lion King when it came out. There was only three movies coming out that year, and two of them were Daniel Day-Lewis films. So it was basically like you just have to keep seeing Lion King over and over again.
Last of the Mohicans.
Great film.
Then moving on after Zootopia, we have number 9, Finding Dory. So okay. Mm-hmm. Love it. Then number 8, Despicable Me 3.
Terrible movie.
Really?
Making a lot of noise on
damn Minions, Tim. Everyone wants to know where the Minions are.
Love the Minions.
Minions coming in at number 5.
Get the fuck out.
Ahead of
Despicable Me.
Number 7 and 6, which is Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 4.
I don't like this list.
Minions have their own movie in addition to Despicable Me.
Minions are everywhere, Joe.
Yeah. Huh.
You open your.
I think they might have two Minions.
Right now, there's a Minion in it.
My closet has a Minion?
Yeah, if you go open it right now, there's a Minion in it.
And his name is Kevin, and he goes,
"Oh, I hate all of this."
Oh, no.
That's a new thing that's happening.
Take it back. I don't want it.
Put it back out there. I need it again.
So the top 4 at number 4 at 1,242,000, wow. Incredibles 2.
Nice.
Then the top 3 goes as follows. Number 3, Frozen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I respect that.
Number 2.
Makes a lot of sense.
Number 2. Mm-hmm. Want to take a guess?
Frozen 2?
Nailed it,
no,
Joey.
No, it's number 1.
Nailed
oh, really?
It.
Really?
Now, yeah. Number 1. Is a surprise, I'll say.
Into
but also,
Spider-Verse.
It kind of feels right.
Is it Boss Baby?
Right.
Is it Boss Baby?
Here's the thing. This might surprise you. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to give you the hint of all hints, and I think someone will get it after this.
Okay.
I don't think you would classify this as animated by default in your mind, but the irony is it entirely is.
Lion King 1, or the new Lion King.
Lion King 2019 coming in at $1,657 million.
I'm so good at what I do. Guys, I'm so good at what I do.
So justice for Lion King in some ways, which I feel good about in some ways. Anyways.
Yeah, though, man. They didn't have that one song I liked.
This movie did not have any Academy Awards notions one way or another. Some fun stats that I always love to drop specifically for Andy. Hank has only 7 tentacles because the animators realized they could not fit 8 onto his body. His backstory was rewritten to account for the missing limb. For similar reasons, in the classic sci-fi film It Came from Beneath the Sea in 1955, special effects genius Ray Harryhausen was only able to create a stop-motion giant octopus with 6 arms. So, that's kind of something.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Every arm you add to stop motion is like 15 more days.
Yeah, exactly.
So. That is how the math works.
Yeah.
And then it does easily pass the Bechdel test, where it's a measure of representation of women in fiction, asking whether a work features at least 2 women who talk to each other about something other than a man. So good for you guys. Dory, you did it. Destiny,
real quick,
you did it.
The arm thing is a big thing in animation. Right? Like, so much so that Paula brought it up. And the squid that we see in the beginning with the one eye, it does have 8 arms. And that was a big deal.
Damn.
Big deal.
Damn. Who's the real hero of this story? Finding Squid, the third sequel.
Right there. Squidworth.
Can't wait for that.
There we go. Squidworth. Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Do you know what Squidworth is?
Squidworth is the guy I was thinking of the guy from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Wasn't that bad guy? Is that him?
Slugsworth.
Slugsworth, shit, not Squidward.
Squidward is SpongeBob SquarePants' neighbor.
Ah, there you go.
There we go. So now let's talk about what we thought.
This came out the same year, Civil War.
Yeah.
Wild year.
That's weird. I just weird to put things together, you know?
Yeah. Civil War, 2016. That makes sense. Crazy stuff. Joey Noel, what'd you think of this?
So I hadn't seen this before. I don't really know why, because I really like Finding Nemo, so I have no idea why I didn't see this. It must have just been 2016 Joey. What was 2016 Joey doing?
If I'm
watching a lot of Kind of Funny, to be honest.
Oh my God, it's not good for your brain, I heard.
That's terrible. Joey, if I can answer for you, it's because it's a sequel, and we all got burned by Return of Jafar. So it's like, why do we...
I knew it. I knew it was going to be bullshit. I knew it was going to be bullshit.
I hate that.
I
think part of why I never saw it is because I was like, a whole movie about Dory. Do we need a whole movie about the side character that probably would seem annoying if she had a whole movie? And then that's why I tapped out. I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't feel like there was too much Dory, which I feel like could have very well been possible. I think they balanced it out with like a fun group of side characters. My least favorite probably is the Ed O'Neill octopus.
How dare you?
I know. But Hank. I love the Hank. Thank you. I'm terrible with names. But I do. I loved the Always Sunny girl and the tank and the Modern Family guy next to it. Like, I think we got a good amount of. Thank you. I'm just gonna call out references and make you guys figure out the rest
of
it.
Okay. I've got it up right now.
Perfect.
I think it's 10 out of 10.
A fun amount of Nemo and Marlin. I actually really like the parents. Was not expecting to be so like touched by the beginning of this movie. I feel like
Pixar,
it kind of caught me off guard, kind of like when the first time I saw Up, where I was like, this is not what I was expecting. But yeah, I liked it. I don't think it like cracks my top 10 probably, but I had a fun time and I would probably watch it again.
Nick Scarpino.
I saw this in theaters randomly. I think it was one of those days where I was like, oh, this is out and I want to see a movie and I like Finding Nemo. And I was not expecting a lot of it, but I thought it was a really good movie. I think it's clever in all the ways it needs to be clever. And then it's short and you get in and you get out. And it's surprisingly poignant for, you know, a story and a character that we've already spent a couple hours with for Finding Nemo. I love that how it starts. I love that it kind of hits really hard and you feel for this small little like cute fish as it's getting lost. Horrible. And it's really sad. And then that sadness is immediately turned into happiness when she runs into Marlin. You realize that was her journey to them and to her new family. And then this is all about her journey to her old family. I think the voice cast is great. And it's beautifully animated. Like I was watching it just on my screen that I'm sure was just probably going to 1080p, and D walked in and she's like, damn, that water looks really good. I'm like, I know, it's unbelievable. And I'm just going to say, that Idris Elba and Dominic West are the two best side characters of any Pixar movie, with the two sea lions that are sitting on the rock and Gerald, that son of a bitch Gerald, Nick trying to sneak up on the rock, bro. Come on, it's fucking hilarious. But yeah, I like this movie. I thought it was really enjoyable, especially the second time around.
So I thought I had watched this movie before. I wasn't sure. I thought I might have, but then like in the first like 30 seconds, I was like, oh, nope, never seen this. And what an emotional roller coaster. Like I wasn't mentally prepared for that ride. Yeah, like the start of it gets you so well. And then Ed O'Neill's character is just fantastic.
It's great.
The entire time. Like I hope Cool Greg was watching this with you, because like that octopus is the best. Absolutely. I'm blown away by it. Like I'm in the same boat with Joey, where it's like, if I thought about it before, I guess I didn't see it because I was like, oh, don't worry, you know, she was a little bit much as a side character. I don't know if I need a movie with her name in the title. And then I watched it and it was great. And yeah, it was a really good movie. Yeah. Very fun.
And I like, you know, I like that they always managed to, like to Tim's earlier point, like this does not have an antagonist. And it's interesting because watching it back a second time, Dory, the character itself, isn't the one that changes. For the most part, she changes everyone around her with sort of her optimism, despite having this very big disadvantage, which is the short-term memory loss. And so like watching it back again, like every single person she touches, she turns like, makes better, you know, including Hank at the end, where like Hank is the biggest salvation of all. Where she's like, no, you need to come live with us. Like you're terrified of this thing, so you're going to this other thing you don't even know about, but like come with us. And then my last point, Tim, before you go, is they got Sigourney Weaver to be Sigourney Weaver. And that, when I heard, I was like, oh, that sounds like Sigourney Weaver. She goes, hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. And I'm like, this guy's just getting me, man. I don't understand what else. I don't need anything else.
That's a very funny bit.
Yeah. I got to say, like, the first two things I want to point out. Number one, I love the commitment to Sigourney Weaver. Of course, she was also, this isn't her first Pixar appearance. She was Axiom, the ship in WALL-E.
WALL-E, that's right.
Yeah.
So this was fun. But I love her as Sigourney Weaver here. I love all the characters just hearing this voice. And like,
referred to her as Sigourney Weaver.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
What did Sigourney Weaver say?
I love that. I thought that was very funny. And I like that it's the type of joke that works for us and in universe for them as well. So definitely appreciate that. But the line that made me laugh so hard in this fucking movie, the delivery of it, I don't think I've ever heard a line delivered as perfectly as, stop it, you're a scientist.
That's good.
I had to play it back like three times because I was laughing so freaking hard. It was absolute gold. I am shocked at how awesome this movie is. I had never seen it. Similar story to you guys. I'm like, I don't know about all this. But man, it really kind of is what I'm looking for from a Pixar sequel. It reminds me very much of the Monsters University or the Toy Story sequels in the sense that I'm like, I like these characters, the new characters you're adding. I'm happy that we're having a fun story. It feels like there's a story worth telling. I think that taking Dory and focusing more on her disability and giving her this whole group of people with different disability or animals and with different types of disabilities, I thought was a really intriguing storyline. And the way that they all kind of help each other and all kind of prove their worth despite the obstacles that they have, I was like, man, there's a lot of heart here and there's a lot of really cool stuff going on. And of course there's emotional moments that really just get you because Pixar knows how to like get you with, I don't call them cheap shots because they're not, they're well developed and they're earned over time. I will say that overall though, none of the Dory moments hit me the way the Dory moments hit in the first movie emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like when the moment where the dad leaves her in the first movie, like, and because of her being forgetful, I felt like this kind of treaded the same water that we've seen before. And I was like a little let down by that. But there, having said that, there was a couple shots that were just utterly gorgeous in this that backed up her mental headspace. Like there's one shot when she's really kind of like feeling alone and she's like more lost than ever. And like she's out there and it's like in the nasty green water. Mm-hmm. And like she's this tiny little fish in this giant, scene, kind of like looking like camera left, and she just looks so alone. But then that's contrasted at the end when she's looking out at the view and like she's listening to Marlon's advice of like, you're one of us, like let's just do her. I can't wait till we can just look at this together. And it's the exact same shot, but it's beautiful and green, and she's like happy looking. And it's just like, even though she's the same size in the frame, she seems so much bigger. And I was like, damn, man, these Pixar motherfuckers, they get it. So while I don't think that this movie has that Pixar magic in the sense of this original story that like completely enraptures us and like makes us like changes us, I think that it's really damn good. And I think that there should be, and I'm happy there is a place for Pixar to make these type of sequel movies that don't need to reinvent the wheel, but just do something really well and spend more time with characters we like. So shout out to them. Pleasant surprise.
And I think to back that up, I think they know what they're accomplishing with these things, and I think they nail it, right? I think Finding Nemo, if you're setting out to like topple or make a movie that's better than Finding Nemo as a sequel, I think that's kind of a fool's errand. I think what you should do is make a nice like continuation of the story, flesh out some of the characters, and no matter what, just try not to make Cars 2. Just don't make the return of Mater. I think to you guys' points, that's exactly what I thought when I first started watching the movie. I was like, oh wow, a whole movie about this side character that I don't like. There's no way they're gonna make this work, and they didn't make it work in Cars 2.
It turns out there was a giant gas leak at Pixar for that whole 3 years.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's actually why that happened.
Everyone was just hallucinating to me. But you know, they managed to find yet another interesting story with Finding Dory, and I think I also think that they fleshed out that character a little bit more in this, which I think was smart.
Yeah. And like, it's one of those things where I was so in that when there's that scene where she goes back to her house and it's like, are the parents alive? Are the parents dead?
I was nervous.
Equally invested either way. I was like, I want the story they're giving me. And I'm like, that's honestly the biggest compliment I can give Finding Dory.
Bro, when she goes outside and sees the shell, I start
Mom
crying.
Love purple shells.
And then when she comes over the hill and sees the network of shells that her parents have been laying out with for her for like the last 10 years or how long she's been. I don't know how long she's been gone. It's fish years. Could be like 2 days. Mm-hmm. But that hit so hard.
I was so scared that at that point she would go and explore the house and figure out
skeletons.
They died, but like they never stopped caring. Cause like that would be a powerful message. Yeah. But like, I'm so happy it wasn't the message that this movie like ended with.
It's nice. Now absolutely. It is nice. Now, Nick, we don't have Andy to start the plot, so I'm just going to say, stop it. You're a scientist.
That's perfect. Ladies and gentlemen, Finding Dory, the movie we never knew we wanted until we had it. Hi, I'm Dory, and I suffer from short-term memory loss, and it's the cutest freaking thing that Pixar has ever designed because I am a sucker for little tiny fish with big eyes. This is little baby Dory playing hide and seek with her parents. She wants to play with the other kids, but they're in the undertow and it's very, very dangerous up there. We're led to believe this is not a tank. And so when it is a tank at the end, surprise, it's a tank. They even have a song. We see the undertow and we say, heck no, not let's go. I would have said let's go too, but Dory guessed it correctly. Dory forgets the song again and again and gets scared. What if I forget you? Will you ever forget me? She says to her parents. And this is the first time I start crying because her parents hug her and say, oh, help cake. We will never forget you, Dory.
So cute.
You will never forget us. So good. And then we see the title screen and cut to a much, much, much darker scene. Dory is lost, of course. Bill Hader and Kate McKinnon pop up to find her, but they lose her again, and she wanders out into the darkness of the ocean, telling herself to just keep swimming. And then we go through the years. Dory continues to search for her family until Ellen DeGeneres finally takes over as older Dory. And, you know, Ellen is Ellen. Obviously, she had a lot of stuff come out of her, but I think she does a great job as a voice actor in this movie. Like, you can't not like her performance in this. So, shout out to her for at least that. Where are we? For the next 6 minutes of this movie are really, really sad. Until they lead right up to Marlin chasing after the boat in Finding Nemo. And the fact that they did that, I was just like, are we getting the Darth Vader fucking, you know what I mean? Right in the new scene? Home. Are we getting it? Is this the hallway scene?
That's what we all wanted from Dory. Absolutely. No, I'm with you though, Nick. Like, we get the beginning of this movie and I'm sitting here and like, I don't even remember seeing trailers for this. Like, I was pretty much just going in completely dark. And as it's going, I'm like, oh shit, they're going to fucking meet up with Nemo and Marlin. Mm-hmm. It's going to like tie in. I did not expect them to do it that cleanly though. And I love that they did it and then kind of just do the time jump and move on. And I was like, expertly done.
Yeah.
Dory tells Marlin which way the boat went and off we go. But that is a story for 12 podcasts ago. Right now, we skip ahead 1 year later and Dory is asleep and dreaming. And it's funny. And she wakes up Marlin and Nemo, but it's not time to get up yet. And she keeps stinging herself and forgetting. And then by the third time, Marlin goes, and we're up. That's it. Ready to start the day. Dory remembers the adventures of Finding Nemo, but now he's But now everyone's embellishing a little bit. Marlon's, you know, telling the story back. It's like, there were four sharks. Like, I thought there was only three sharks. No, there were definitely four. Let's see. Marlon tries to talk Dory out of going on the class field trip because she tends to wander off, but she ends up volunteering somehow to be the teacher's assistant, much to the Stingray teacher's chagrin. And
I loved this. Yeah. Where it's just so oblivious. Like, oh, obviously you want me to be the assistant. You want me to help. I'm like, exactly. Those are the little Dory moments that like I really love. And I'm glad that we got those and they didn't like become too saturated. The welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The field trip, of course, is to study the great stingray migration that's about to happen, to see where everyone came from. One of the kids asked Dory where she came from, where's her family, and she can't remember, and it's sad. But she does remember she had a family at some point, and then starts to give a speech on the birds and the bees, or I guess as you would call
it. That was so funny.
And the kelp? I don't know. What would we call the birds and the bees?
Yeah, that's fish and kelp was fine, but that was hilarious.
off we go to the edge of the reef. To the shelf, and we can see the stingrays, but we have to be careful of the undertow, which jogs one of Dory's deep memories, and that's going to be sort of a thing that happens over and over again in this film, to a point where it's almost a little heavy-handed, but you know what? The film's so good, we're just going to give it a little bit of a pass. Something deep inside her that's so familiar, you have to listen to it. On cue, the stingrays migrate as if by, and they're singing a chorus, homeward bound words. Dory tries to remember the saying, we see the undertow and we say, but before she can finish, she gets swept up in the stingray and stingrays and knocked out. When she comes to, she remembers the jewel of Morro Bay, California. And when Nemo,
I got like kind of excited when they said that. I was like, oh, I was not expecting that. And I'm like, it's a place I know and I'm familiar with.
And what's cool about that, Joey, is Riley Anderson, a supporting character from Pixar's previous film, Inside Out, has a very brief cameo in the film. Right after Dory is thrown into Destiny's tank, she bumps into the glass viewing window. Riley can be seen in the crowd of children in the back row.
Oh.
That's kind of fun because remember, she was in SF. So,
yeah, that totally makes sense.
Let's see. Dory wants to go and find them. But, when Nemo echoes the sentence, is Nemo, that's the kid's name? I just wrote that down. It looks so weird.
Yeah.
Echoes the sentiment. Dory gets a flash. They made a whole movie about it. And her family, out of her family, and she takes off. She wants to go find them, but Marlon stops. So the only reason to travel in the first place is so that you don't have to travel ever again. And if I didn't write that down from this movie, if I just saw that quote, I'd swear to God it was from Tim Geddes and me. All I know is that I missed them, she says. I didn't know what that felt like. Do you know what that feels like? She says to Marlon. And of course, Marlon does know because he missed his son when he lost him in the prior movie. So Marlon looks at Nemo and relents. Yes, I know what that feels like. Somewhere out there is my family. Please, Marlon, I can't find them on my own. Please help me find my family. And then Nemo says, you can't get us all the way across the ocean, right, Dad? And he goes, no, but I know a guy. And off we go surfing with the turtles. And it's totally sick. No, Tim, I'm going to be totally sick. Was the joke they say here?
Yeah, that is the joke. Brooks, that is that is the joke. Yeah, and speaking of voices, right there, you're gonna bring it up, Brooks. Hayden Rowlands replaces Alexander Gold as the voice of Nemo due to Gold having outgrown his original role since Finding Nemo in 2003, yeah, which makes a lot of sense because this movie, at least the majority of it, takes place 1 year later in the story. That would not make sense for at that point, 17-year-old boy. to be doing the voice. Same problem with Squirt. So the Bennett Damon was replaced with Nicholas Bird.
Brad Bird's kid?
That's a good question. Let me look.
Maybe not. I'll keep going. Dory, Marlon, and Nemo break out of the Rip Curl and end up in a ship graveyard, sunk in, I think, cargo container, ship rather. Dory calls out for her parents, and all the crabs pop up and go, shh, and then pop right back down. And Dory is not getting the hint, but Marlon's like, there's something really bad that's happening here. We shouldn't just come into someone's neighborhood and start making all this noise. So I get the feeling they're shushing us for a reason, and that reason is the one-eyed Kraken. It's a big old squid that chases after them through the sunken ship, gets stuck in a falling cargo container, and pulls Nemo down with it. Marlon and Dory follow and save him seconds before the container smashes the squid onto the ocean floor. Dory keeps forgetting that Nemo is hurt, and Marlon tells her to go over there and forget. It's what she does best. And this, it's kids, is a dick move. Don't say things like this. You can't take him back.
Dory, it's a dick move, and honestly, it felt a little, not out of nowhere, but I was kind of like, I don't like this, man. Like, it just kind of feels like, from the conversations of them living together with her, it's just like, this felt a little too sequel convenient of like, we need a plot for this thing right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Marlon, like, is prone to, like, I don't know what the hell was going on with Nemo, because it seemed like more than just like he got scared, right? Because he was like breathing and he kept being like, are you all right? I don't know. I felt like it was very much in character for Marlin to be that way.
But my thing is, it was in character for Marlin before the end of the last movie, not after the end of the last movie. But either way, Nicholas Burt is
character growth.
Is the voice of Squirt in the first movie, got replaced in this one, and that is in fact Brad Bird's son. Wow. And in this little Kraken scene, the Pizza Planet truck is underwater.
Oh wow, that's cool. Oh, I like that.
Pizza Planet.
After this, of course, Dory decides to go at it on her own and follows the voice of Sigourney Weaver, who guides her to the surface, where she is captured by some workers from the Marine Life Institute, which looks kind of run down, actually. Maybe don't spend so much money getting Sigourney Weaver to do your announcements. Probably get a couple fresh coats of paint on that bad boy. Let's see. I think I had this written that Ty Burrell and Caitlin Olsen have some fun cameos here as the people that picked them up, but I don't know if that's them or not because they're actually characters later, so just disregard that. Hank, the octopus, tells Dory that her tag is going to send her to Cleveland instead of being released, and she freaks out. And Hank's like, listen, I want that tag so I can take your place in the transport truck. He doesn't want to get released back to the ocean. It's a hard life out there. He pours himself a cup of coffee, and they strike a deal. And this scene is great because at first she's like, I don't want it. She's like, no, I kind of like my tag. I don't want to give my tag. And then, of course, she forgets she said that. And then she's like, oh, I know what I could give you if you help me out. This tag. And the look, the animated look on his face is so, especially since it's Ed O'Neill. You're like, what a perfect person to cast. Yeah,
very good casting.
Yeah,
that's
very good.
Frustrated with this person.
I love how it's animated and like just the little Pixarisms that like make all the difference of this thing camouflaging, like moving around. Love the way it moves, but even just when it's not moving, like when it's just small, simple, when it's not slithering, I mean, like it's there, it grabs this pot of coffee, it just starts drinking the coffee, and that alone is funny looking. But then fills it with water and puts Dory in it. It's just like, I love this shit.
And then it uses it later as to disguise itself as a plant. All of the chameleon-esque moments with this octopus are so clever and so fun, to the point where like they're like, we know. And you know how we know? Because we're going to do a whole end credit sequence with just this. We had so much fun doing this stuff that we're just going to throw like 18 more rendered scenes, which must have cost them like $500,000 to do for the credit sequence. But it's hilarious. Let's see. Back out in the bay, Marlin is in denial about pushing Dory away until Nemo calls him out on it. Then here we go, everyone. Strap on your boots and make sure your seatbelts are fastened, because we get the best voice work in all of Pixar from Idris Elba. And I believe it's Dominic West is the guy that played the other sea lion. And they both tell Marlin and Nemo that Sigourney Weaver doesn't lie. The Institute is all about rehabilitation, rescue, rehabilitation, and then release. So they'll probably release Dory. That right now she's in that quarantine though. Then you guys... Swear to God, that asshole Gerald trying to sneak it up on their rock, and they give him a bit of the old what for. This is the best part. I know I say this a lot, Joey. I know I say this at least once.
This is a really good moment.
This is the best moment in every Pixar movie, any Pixar movie, just across the board. And if I said it before, that's wrong. This is right. I stand by the present, not the past.
I didn't like it.
No, the
Gerald character to me felt like Pixar trying to make this type of character, but I understand people liking it, and I'm happy other people do.
Kevin, can you go get the defibrillator, please, for Tim, because his heart has clearly fucking stopped.
He's dead inside. You're right. He's dead inside.
Holy shit. It's not that it's a whole, I mean, obviously it is on the nose, Tim. You're 100% right. It's just that it's Idris Elba. Like, how did they get him for this? Didn't he have better to do? He's like, nah, fuck it. I'll phone it in for an hour. I love it. Anyway, Fluke confirms that the Marine Life Institute is the jewel of Morro Bay and says Dory was right. Look. Looks like Dory can do something. And then Nemo says, looks like Dory can do something other than forget. And then Marlin's like, thank you, Nemo. Hank and Dory head toward the map on the way in the hallway. As one of the workers gets a call from that the octopus has escaped again. He's supposed to go back to the ocean today. So that starts the ticking clock. When he turns around, Hank hides in the coffee pot and pretends to be plant, which I thought was hilarious. Dory remembers she used to go shell finding with her parents, and baby Dory is adorable again. She remembers her home had a purple shell because that was her mom's favorite. Another worker finds Hank's tracks. So he hides out as part of the railing while Dory jumps into a bucket labeled Destiny because... it's labeled Destiny, and she thinks her destiny is to go in there. Unfortunately, Destiny is a big old whale shark that's in the big tank, and she gets poured out into it.
Cute. One thing before we move on. Idris Elba, in this same year, did Finding Dory, Jungle Book, and Zootopia. Just on Disney payroll all year.
Interesting. They were just like, how much? They were like, Idris, how much money can we give you? And he's like, I mean, I'm down for two roles. So like, can we squeeze out a third? He's like, sure, sure.
He's like, I'm already here. I might as well just knock out these lines.
I mean, come on, dude. He's great.
And then Ragnarok the next year.
Oh, yeah. Heimdall.
And Ultron the year before.
Are we going to get, are we going to bring back Heimdall, Tim? What's happening?
There was an article today talking about that Idris Elba is going to return somehow, but I don't know how.
Bad to the
different universe.
Variants.
I don't care what universe it is. I need it. Destiny tells Dory, let's see, Dory and Destiny speak well to each other, and Destiny remembers. So she's like, oh my God, Dory, we were friends. They used to talk through the pipes when they were little, which is why Dory can speak whale. Hilarious.
I got so excited when this happened. I looked over and I was like, this is how she knows how to speak whale. Yeah,
exactly.
It was absurd.
Tim, it's a really good callback from the first one.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's no dice hanging around, hanging on. Fucking God, rear view mirror.
I wonder, I was like, why didn't it just go Tim? Like, as if I was in opposition to this.
Oh, I just don't understand why you're against it, Tim.
Oh, Tim.
Like, the whale reference is good and the vest is great.
Kevin, I need
the dice
you to
were
grab,
too far.
I need you to grab 2 9-volt batteries and affix them to Tim's nipples because his heart is dead. And
Jesus.
We need to jumpstart.
I don't think that works
heart.
The way you think it does, Nick.
I mean, when I was a kid, it used to do the trick.
The quickest way to a man's heart.
Is right his nipples. Put a little water on those
with a couple 9-volts.
Jesus Christ, let's move on. Destiny tells Dory, she's like, Dory, you're from the open ocean exhibit. And then Ty Burrell, playing Bailey, the bottlenose dolphin, her neighbor. He's a little curmudgeon-y because he hit his head and he lost his ability to use his echolocations. Even though Destiny's like, you still have the ability. It's just all in your head. He's like, no, I can't do
so
it.
So good.
Nick, this is one of those things where as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be 50-50 with Nick. But you saying that you love every single time the octopus does the camel stuff, which I totally agree with.
So good.
I love every single time they do echolocation.
Oh, God.
It was one of those things so I was funny. Like, I know they're overusing this. I don't give a fuck. Do it 3 times more because it's
it was
getting me
fun.
Every
it
time.
Was so much fun, dude.
When he gets the power back and he goes from doubting himself and being sort of like, what is that term you use when you think you're sick, but you're like, you always think you're sick? Like
hypochondriac.
Yeah, he kind of has that like, he has that, like, he's doing this to himself. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of, like, I can't use it, I can't use it. But when she finally, like, gets him out of his rut and he realizes he can use it, he goes from not confident to himself to calling it his special power in, like, a half a second. And that is my kind of energy right there. It's like, hold on, he's my special gift.
And it's so perfectly Ty Burrell, too. Like, God, I can't imagine anyone else pulling it off the way that he does.
Yeah, he's really good. It was good.
He's so annoying, you know? Like, he just, it was such a good choice for the role.
Let's see. Destiny tells Dory she can get to the open ocean exhibit by going through the pipes, but Dory's like, I'll get lost. Dory remembers her father's words. There's always another way. Outside, Fluke and Rudder call over Becky so she can fly them in. And man, Becky, again, you want to talk about a group of people that are my kind of jam. Fluke, Rudder, and Becky, come on, dude. Let's get a couple Boone Strawberry Farms to hang out on that rock all day. All they have to do is look her in the eyes and say, ooh, ooh, and she'll imprint on them. So Marlin doesn't want to, but Nemo's like straight guilt him. So he looks into her eyes and says, ooh, and she imprints on him and then sits on him. And Fluke and Rudder call up Gerald so they can borrow his pail, and they finally give him the time on that rock that little piece of shit deserves, which is 2 seconds, and then time's up. Get off the rock, Gerald. Get off. Off.
It's so good.
It's perfect. Again, Kevin, go get a 6-pack of AA batteries and have Tim sit on him because his heart is dead.
Why do the batteries keep changing? Let's just stick to the 9-volt.
We can find the local quarter store, man. Give me an iced coffee while you're done. Let's see. Hank and Dory hide out in a stroller. This is hilarious. While Destiny and Bailey distract the humans, they head through the path to the open ocean and bang.
The way that they do the transportation of Dory with like different containers is my favorite thing because they all make sense for wherever they are. Like the coffee pot, this being like a little sippy cup and stuff. It's so good.
I thought that was very well done in the sense that the Finding Nemo I thought got really impressive when the, with the way they use that as well, of like getting into the dentist office and like having the, you know, little office aquarium and all that stuff. But like they did a good job of playing with the toilets and the way to get to the ocean and all that. This movie was like, fuck it. And like, I really feel like the storyboard started with them being like, what story do we want to tell? Yeah. What locations do we have? It's like, okay, there's a freeway. There's a this, there's a that. And they're like, cool. Let's work backwards and connect it with water. And like that made it fun. Cause like obviously any logic goes out the fucking window. We're dealing with talking fish. It's okay. And I thought the rules they set up in this movie, they stuck to in a way that I very much enjoyed.
Them throwing an octopus in changed the game.
Changed the game, man.
You know, you're not limited to where they can bounce into. Hands. This guy can climb. Mm-hmm. He's got seven.
He's better than some people say they're better than humans. I agree. Hank and Dory hide out in that stroller while Dory is in that little baby sippy cup of water while Destiny Billy are distracted. Anyway, they head through the path to the open ocean and bang into the kid. So Hank pretends to be a baby and it's very creative and also terrifying. Becky
it's
leaves
so
Marlin and
scary.
Nemo in a tree so she can eat the spilled popcorn from Hank and Dory in Dory's accident. And Dory spots a sign to the world's most powerful pair of glasses, heads forward. Of course, she has that memory from back in the day as well. While Nemo and Marlin are hanging out in the tree, Nemo tells him to trust Becky, but he doesn't. And he ends up getting catapulted into a fish tank by the gift shop. And then literally a second later, Becky takes the little cup over to the quarantine. And he's just like, damn it, should have trusted Becky. I got to start listening to this kid. Hank gets angry at Dory. And she tells him that for a guy with three hearts, he's not very nice. And the stroller loses control and crashes and crash lands Dory and Hank right in the worst of all places. The kids touching pool. And let's go around the table right now.
Yep,
when you were a kid, did you like this little thing? Because I loved it.
I loved it. Are you kidding? I'm all over. You're terrified?
Terrified.
I like I don't want to touch a starfish.
No.
Oh, they're so cool.
No, it was the stingray.
Yeah, it was soft.
No, that's the one that I was scared of.
No, it was so cool.
I just killed no part of this. I wanted to poke them all.
Yeah, but that was like a deadly stingray. This is like a little bitch ass stingray that like just sat there and, you know, didn't even move. Poked. It might have been dead now that I'm thinking about it.
No way. It's not dead.
That was dead. It's a dead stingray.
They don't do those anymore, though, right?
No way. Not dead.
No way.
No,
because they would like swim around.
That is a fine establishment, Kevin.
Joey has no idea.
You know, so do they do that anymore? Because I feel like.
Well, not in Corona times.
Kill stingrays?
No. I would imagine they don't.
Yeah, because like I know it's Six Flags. I know that was during Corona times. But I feel like last time I went to the Monterey Aquarium, which is actually with IGN, I'm pretty sure it was covered up.
Mm. Kevin's there like, let me touch them fishies. They're like,
I like
no,
touching
Kevin.
Stingrays. What am I supposed to tell you? I like the
Kevin's
risk.
Like, you're either going to let me touch a fish or I'm going to go into your freezer and touch all the fish sticks that are frozen in there. That's where we're at. Anyway, Dory tells Hank that he just keeps swimming. Let's see. Oh, she gets another memory. I'm sorry, I can't remember right, but her mother tells her she doesn't need to be sorry. You know what you need to do, Dory. You need to just keep swimming. And they sing a song about it. And the music here reminds me a lot of the flashback sequence in Edward Scissorhands when the old man dies and leaves him alone forever. Dory tells Hank they need to just keep swimming. She sings the song as she leads him through the gauntlet toward Poker's Cove. And everyone's like, don't go, that's Poker's Cove. And Hank takes one right in the face and just inks all over the tank. And then he says, sorry. And Dory waits a perfect beat and says, that's okay. Everybody does it. It's poop they're talking about. Hank thanks her for saving them. When they pop up to the surface, they see the echolocation exhibit, which is labeled the world's strongest pair of glasses. And Dory's like, that's where I got it. I like all these little things that are like all these sayings that she said. Again, a little heavy-handed, but we see a little bit of setup payoff real close here, and I like that. And right beside it sits the open ocean exhibit. Back in the gift shop tank, Marlin tries to get Becky's attention, but Nemo tells him to forget it. You made her feel like she couldn't do it. But of course, he's not talking about Becky. He's talking about Dory. They miss Dory, so they decide to channel her. What would Dory do? And Marlin's like, well, Dory would assess all of her options and then make the correct decision and strategy. She goes, no, that was what you would do. What would Dory do? And he goes, well, Dory would just do whatever the first thing she sees was. You just go head toward that. And of course, they look over. What do they spot? One of those. I don't know why they have these fountains. Surely
so
it's just
cool
to make
why.
Children sticky or something.
What?
I don't know.
Sticky? Why would it make a child sticky?
I mean, I feel like the kid's got sticky hands and wet pants. What's like? That's the worst thing ever. They run at you and they grab you and the back of their hands stick to
your
head.
A child has never grabbed you. A child has never grabbed you.
Children love Uncle Nick. They like to hug Uncle Nick.
Do you have any toddler-aged children in your world?
I do not.
I didn't think so.
In my brain, though, whenever someone has a kid.
Who did we buy that toy for?
When we were in Target for way too long.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, they don't live here anymore, so yeah. That kid does not remember.
And even when they did, they usually stayed away from Nick.
That kid didn't like me very much.
No.
I gave him the cool.
But Nick, I'm going to be 100% honest. Yeah. That was that kid's fault, not your fault.
Yeah, I give him every chance to like me. I bought him.
You gave him so many chances. You bought him a good toy.
I don't want to kick you while you're down here with all this, but I need to tell the story of you waking up the kid.
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
Don't tell that story.
Can I tell it, Nick?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay, so a couple of weekends ago, our friend was visiting who has two young children. One that is like, I don't know, five or some shit, and one that is like one or less than two. Newborn. I'm not really sure, but like very little. And this kid, the little one, was sleeping. And there's the baby monitors that like work both ways or whatever. And somebody handed Nick, the dad handed Nick the baby monitor. I was like, oh, like they're on the other side. Do you want to talk to it?
So you're painting the picture. You're being too nice to me. The thing was just sitting on the table. And I was like, oh, you got a walkie talkie. So I picked it up and I for some reason hit the talk back button. I was like, oh, breaker. This is big Nick Scarpino.
For some reason, because he was trying to play like it was a
radio. Yeah, I was just trying to be funny. This would be funny. But it didn't occur to me that that a baby monitor has a, like, why would you need to talk back to the kid? Like, why would you need to be able to make noise to the child? I don't know. And then all of a sudden the kids started crying. And I was like,
all of a sudden, chaos. This baby is awake. There are tears everywhere. And it was like, my favorite part of it was like, in my opinion, clearly not Nick's fault. It was Nick's responsibility that he did it, whatever. But it's like, who gives a shit? And like, it was an accident. And like, he didn't mean to.
That's what happens. Baby, wake up.
But like, then all of a sudden, I've never seen my friend in dad mode. Where I was like, oh shit.
Yeah,
like,
had to go.
The kid comes number one over anything.
100%.
Like, oh, whoa, okay. No more walkie-talkies for me.
Our friends are two of the nicest human beings on this planet. But the look he gave me of like, by the way, Joe, the kid had been asleep for like an hour and a half. This was the end of his nap time, but it doesn't matter because when you're a parent with a newborn and like a 3 or 4 year old,
every moment,
5 minutes silence is what you needed to get through the day. He looked at me like I just burned his house down. And he,
not to mention now the kid, it's a chaotic kid and who knows how that sets up the next.
Well, also we just got done. We just got done with one of the other kids that was there locking herself in the bathroom. And by locking herself in the bathroom, Joe, I mean, she hit the button. And then the dad's like, he's like, honey, just turn the knob. Just turn the knob, honey. And she's like, get me out of here. Get me out of here.
Before we get back to the plot, though,
oh my God.
Let me tell you about our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you by MeUndies. MeUndies believes that your comfort is about more than what's touching your skin. It's about being comfortable in your skin. And when you're truly comfortable, you get a slam dunk kind of feeling, you know? That's right. MeUndies and Space Jam are bringing you new undies. Ladies and gentlemen, you know I only wear MeUndies. A long time ago, I found out how comfortable they were, threw away the rest of my underwear, and only buy MeUndies. I still do to this day. And the Space Jam one is interesting for people like Blessing. MeUndies' new Space Jam print features Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and other iconic characters who are all tuned up and ready for a rematch. MeUndies are made from micromodal fabric, which is not only soft but breathable, light, and impossibly cozy. Check out their new Space Jam collection in the softest undies, socks, bralettes, dog hoodies, and loungewear, available in sizes XS to 4XL. Here's your chance, do your dance, to score their new collection before the clock runs out. To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. Up next is Canva. We've talked about Canva a lot, ladies and gentlemen. If you are making things on the internet and you need video, you need audio, you need Canva Pro. Tim's been using it. Roger's been using it. Nick has been using it. Anybody who's not just screaming into a microphone all day like me at Kinda Funny is using it to make our stuff better. Canva Pro is the easy-to-use design platform that has everything you need to design like a pro. Whether you're a professional designer or just getting started, Canva Pro can help boost you and your team's productivity and creativity. Canva Pro has everything you need in one place, including a collection of over 75 million premium photos, videos, audio, and graphics. Design like a pro with Canva Pro. Right now, you can get a free 45-day extended trial when you use our promo code. Just go to canva.me/kindoffunny to get your free 45-day 5-day extended trial. That's canva.me/kindoffunny. canva.me/kindoffunny. And our final sponsor of the day is Upstart. If you're carrying a credit balance month after month, it can feel like you're in a never-ending cycle of debt. Upstart can help you make that final payment so you can get ahead. Upstart is the fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan all online. Unlike other lenders, Upstart considers your income and current employment to find you a smarter rate for your loan. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. You can receive the funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/KFMB. That's upstart.com/KFMB. Don't forget to use our URL so that they know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your application. Go to upstart.com/KFMB.
Do you remember when Jen got locked in the bathroom at the studio?
Yep, I was just hilarious. Thinking that. And let's just be like, everyone, just turn the knob, Jen. Just turn the knob.
She's like, we don't have knobs in Canada.
Jen yeah, and Gordy.
This kid went from
we get out the window just
nuclear level like freak
John
out.
John Drake did.
To everyone goes to I don't Tim, you didn't see this, but everyone's like crap. And Kevin, of course, these are all like kid locks, right? You can poke through the little thing, but sure. They didn't have something long enough to get it. So everyone scrambled.
Got to cut
they
that off of a Q-tip.
I mean, the Q-tips.
Who's got a Q-tip on hand
in the bathroom? That's right. That's right. Why they keep the Q-tips. So I was like, slide me a Q-tip. And she goes, she's freaking out, Daddy, get me out of here, Daddy, get me out of here. Everyone scatters. I'm looking around trying to find something, and I swear to God, the second everyone leaves. As like this thing's like DEFCON fucking one, like nuclear level, the kid just opens up the door and strolls out. Nothing, no problem whatsoever. I figured it out. The dad's like, meanwhile, his beer is like warm, but he's like, well, this is just my life now. Anyway, let's see. They spot the fountain that the parents and the kids do, and then it works. They jump out. And they almost suffocate, but it works, and it ends up they land in a tank with a clam and his pearl, and man, he is a talker. And I like how they get out of this. By the way, did you guys catch the one line where they're like, "Yeah, we just kind of slowly backed away."
Slowly backed away.
Just left him.
I thought this joke didn't land as hard. Like as
it could have been.
I get it now that it was the director's voice, right?
Yeah, Andrew.
But I just thought it was a little bit awkward and kind of like it didn't have a real good solid punchline other than that they left. Real quick, though, just to go back to the fountains, like, we like the fountains, right?
I don't like those things. They're freaky.
Well, yeah, I know, Nick.
It's like the water that just shoots out of the ground?
Yeah, you run on it and it shoots, like, water up your legs?
Like, yes.
Like, as a kid or as an adult?
I mean, I don't know that there's a difference, Joey. I don't know that there's a difference.
Why do we have to make that distinction?
I meant, like, I don't want to run through one currently, but, like, as a kid, that was the most exciting thing, you know?
Okay, good. I just want to make sure that we're all on the same boat on that, except for Nick, obviously.
I'm in the other boat. I don't
like it. I'm off the boat. I love getting wet.
Mm-hmm. He's all about it, Joey. Watch out for He's the all batteries, it. Though.
Let's see. Hank traverses the landscape with Dory in a cup of water. They get to the top of the open ocean exhibit, and Dory finally makes good on the tag. She says, you know, I think I'm going to remember you. And he goes, you'll forget me in a heartbeat, kid. Three heartbeats. I'll have a hard time forgetting you. And then he pours her back into the exhibit. And she sets about finding her folks. And then she says, hi, have you seen a mom and dad without me? Great. Great writing.
It's so good.
Dory spots a shell and remembers her parents made her path a shell's leading to their home. But when she gets there, nobody is home. And she spots her mom's favorite purple shell, but it's covered in sand.
So sad and heartbreaking because you're like, what's happening? Am I going to cry? Know. Is it going to be happy tears? Or is it going to be sad tears?
And when she sees her mom's favorite purple shell covered in sand, she conjures up yet another memory of her parents crying because they're worried that when they die, no one will be around to take care of her. And they don't know what's going to happen. And then she gets sucked into the rip curl, into the pipe and realizes that they didn't lose her. She lost them. Two crabs, I think one played by John Ratzenberg here, tell them all the blue tangs are up in quarantine. They're going over to Cleveland. And I like how they're mowing the lawn. Just mowing the lawn, Kev. Just like we mow our lawns.
Is it just me? Has Cleveland come up a lot? Just in general, kind of funny content.
Well, it's a place.
Barrett, yeah, Barrett's from there.
It's a place that none of
he
us
goes there. And stuff, right?
It's a place that none of us go to. We just heard tale of Cleveland, so we're.
Who was the female crab? the wife crab, and that's because
they pitched up their voices. I don't know. I barely recognize John Ratzenberger's voice, but I will say to the credit, or rather, I love the director of this. It's great that he decided to Quentin Tarantino and put himself in as the Clam. But John Ratzenberger should have been that Clam. He would have knocked that role out of the park. Just give him.
It would have been so memorable. We would have been like, remember when John Ratzenberger was talking about nothing?
The Clam. Exactly. It would have been perfect. You needed a big name for that scene. Let's see. Dory heads in. Let's see. Oh, Dory heads to the pipes. She's like, the best way to get to the pipes there. And she says, listen, it's really easy. Two lefts and a right, and you'll get there. And this scene terrifies me.
Terrifies me.
As a person who's mildly claustrophobic and has a hard time remembering who says what, this scene hits really close to home. Dory heads in and starts to forget. She swims frantically, and it's really scary until she remembers her pipe pals. She calls Destiny for help, and Destiny makes Bailey step up and use that echolocation that she knows he can. And when he does, he spots Dory and guides her through to quarantine. But before he can, he spots something coming for her.
It's a fucking alien. Know what
it is. And he says, get out of the way. But she ends up running right into it. And it's Marlin and Nemo. And they hug. But on the echolocation, it looks like she's being eaten. And he says, it's consuming her. It's eating her alive. But Dory tells them they need to head to quarantine. And she wonders if her parents will want to see her. And Marlin tells her, of course, they found her with the mantra, what would Dory do? He says, ever since I met you, you showed me how to do stuff I never dreamed of doing, like finding my son. You didn't know that because I never told you, but because of who you are about to find your parents, and what you do that, and when you do that, you'll be home. Nemo realizes then that they'll probably have to say bye to Dory, but the park closes for the night as the final load goes onto the truck to Cleveland.
Which again, another Pixar moment where I'm like, do you need to say goodbye? Or... you can be like, oh, you live here? We live there. Yeah. We'll see each other every once in a while.
Yeah. Like, but we can so come up with
some solutions here.
You realize that, like, the distance that we're talking about is like a third of the world.
Dude, I got friends that live in Emeryville.
I got friends in London that I see every once in a while.
Yeah, but you have the internet.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
You have legs
and planes.
They got the brush, bro.
Money. You have money.
They got fins, guys.
Wait, Nick, was that scene?
Body of water goes to Cleveland that they can get to
the lake.
Yeah, you gotta get like the right bus. It's a whole. And then are you ever getting back to an ocean? Cleveland's awful. We all know it. Nick, was that an homage to Alien? Yeah, right, with the tracking and whole.
Probably. Okay. I didn't think that, but yeah, it was probably the first Alien actually. Where Chris Christopherson, Tom Skerritt was stuck in the thing. She's like,
Skerritt.
No, God, what was his name in it? Fuck. Anyway, yeah, that was a good call.
It had the same kind of like.
Where you see him going through the pipes. She's like, you're going right toward it.
Yeah. And but also, like the vents are like that creepy dark color. Yeah. God, it was.
Everyone should.
That's good. Things. Interesting that, like, they have these little homages in Pixar movies that are like very adult movie. You know, like Dallas. Like the Chinatown.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like those little references. That's for old people like me.
I like it though. I like it a lot.
Tom Skerritt's character name in Alien was Dallas. Dallas. Anyway,
I don't know if I've ever seen the first Alien.
Joey, it's very good.
Because I love the second one so much.
I'll come over and scare you.
Second one's great.
Should we do a movie night?
Oh, we'll do Alien review at some.
They're inevitably at some point. And I'm saying this now, at some point, I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, but we will do an Alien versus Predator in review. And we're going,
that's gonna
we're
be
going
so all out.
That's there's so like, many movies.
There's like 16, I think.
Alien. Yeah, and the thing is, a whole bunch of them aren't even connected to like a whole bunch of other ones. Yeah, because all the new ones are not connected, right?
Mm, we'll Covenant. Have to watch to find out.
There it is.
We'll have to watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are we going to also do Blade Runner in there?
Mm-hmm. We should.
Yes!
Because they're tied.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And the car park closes for night. They land in a tank, meant for the open ocean, so they tank hop, but get stuck in a mop bucket. Hank comes to the rescue. He scoops them up and pours them into the tank with the rest of the blue tangs, but it turns out her parents went to look for her and never came back. They're gone. Dory has a panic attack and in the confusion gets poured out into the ocean while Marlin, Nemo, and Hank get thrown on the truck to Cleveland. Once again, Dory is alone and lost. The scene is a mirror of the beginning, and it's sad and scary. Dory begins to cry. She says, I lost everyone. There's nothing I can do. I can't forget. What was I forgetting? Something important. It's going away. All I do is forget.
It's so scary.
It's what Fucked I do up. Best. What I do best. What do I do? What would Dory do? And she remembers. She's fucking Dory, bro. Hell she's yeah, Dory.
She is.
She sees for the first time. She heads for the first thing she sees, which is a kelp forest. Then toward the squishy sand below. She says, "There's nothing here. Lots of kelp and some shells. I like shells." So she decides to follow the shells. And when she does, they form a pathway. And when she comes over a small hill, she spots a network of shell paths, all leading to the same place.
And this before she knows it, is this, one of my favorite types of moments in movies, and it's the moment that makes me go,
"Yep."
You know, I just love it. It's that get hype. It's that like, oh, we're there. This is going to happen. And they fucking did it. Thank they you, did. Pixar.
Because as she turns around, two shadowy figures approach her. And she says, "Hello." And they scream back, "Dory." Because it's really, good.
Diane Keaton, fucking killing it.
Diane Keaton and Eugene Levy. Come on.
Come on.
Dynamic duo.
Tell me you can't feel all the feels with that. Can we get a check on Tim's heart on that one?
God. Somebody go get a car. Go get a car battery and a spool of copper.
Evan
wire.
And Nick, the batteries of the show of words. The heart's back, baby. It's there pumping. It's there pumping. It I love Cheryl.
Did you hear what he just said? A spool of wire and a car battery. Jesus Christ. We're charring some Tim in this example.
Damn.
Let's see. Dory apologizes to her mom and tells her not to be, but her mom tells her not to be sorry. She says, "You found us." They followed her through the pipes and stayed and decided to stay put. Every day they laid out paths of cells so she could find them. And she remembered in her own amazing way. She found them all by herself. Wait, she wasn't by herself. Marlin and Nemo with her. And then she realizes, oh God, we got to go find them. Dory catches her parents up on the situation and they head back to the calming voice, Sigourney Weaver. They spot the truck and Dory needs a plan. She hits up Destiny for help and Bailey tells her they got to jump into the ocean, but Destiny freaks and Bailey tells her there's no wall in the ocean. It's your destiny, Destiny. They chase after the truck. Fluke and Rudder come too, even though that fucking snake Gerald gets on their rock and they're like, "We're coming back for that rock, Gerald." And when we come back, fucking hell's
don't
coming.
Don't get comfy.
Yeah. Don't you get comfy over there. Dory pulls the plan together and her parents freak that they might lose her again. But she says, "Even if I forget, I can find you again." And with that, Destiny launches Dory into the air on top of the bridge as a line of adorable sea otters line up behind her.
Part.
And she says, they form the world's cutest cuddle party that stops traffic. And it's the point where, again, you want to talk about how good Pixar is at knowing exactly how you're going to react to something. They form it and they start cuddling. And I say to myself, "Oh, that's cute." And the guy in the car in front of them goes, "Oh, that's cute." And I'm like, damn, they fucking know, man.
Dude, this scene is like proof that Pixar are masters, because this should not work. And in fact, it doesn't work. I'm going to say it. This is dumb and stupid and out of the world that we've seen in this movie. Okay. But I love it. I loved how they did it. I love how these things look. I love the way that they stand. They stood with the amount of space between them. Like, so many artistic choices. Yeah, that pairing. It's like,
it was set up throughout the whole movie. They kept talking about otters. Like, there's, I think, two mentions of otters cuddling.
I know, but like for them, the otters, time. So then there was never a conversation of them teaming up with the otters. They were just,
and for
there
the
was a
otters to be on the freeway.
Like, there's some otters there. And they're like, next scene, there's otters on the freeway. Which, hey,
they made it very clear that they were going to go and talk to the otters. Like, I got it. I'm right there with you, Pixar. You guys are, I don't know why Disney's trying to kill you guys. You keep going strong, guys.
Yous keep going strong, guys.
Keeps going strong, Utes. The truck driver empties out the back of the truck, so Marlin thinks fast. Sorry, the door pops open, and Hank puts Dory in the tank with Nemo and Marlin. They're overjoyed to see each other, but the truck driver empties out the back of the truck, so Marlin thinks fast and calls in Becky, but she only takes them. When she returns, Dory refuses to leave until Hank agrees to Sigourney Weaver's third principle. Of course, those principles, again, are rescue, rehabilitate, and especially release. Finally,
I love that all the other fish know this because they've just heard that
so much,
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And they're like, "Oh yeah, that's what the third thing is."
But this is a great scene, right? And this is again another proof that like this is the power of their story here, is that Dory just has this infectiousness and influences everyone in such a positive light. And she's like, "I'm not leaving this incredibly dangerous spot until you agree to come be basically our family and live with us." And he's like, "Fine, I'll do it." Even though the ocean is scary, she'll go with him and it'll be good. When she returns, Dory spots an emergency. Hank's like, "There is just literally no other way out." And Dory's like, "What about that?" And it's an emergency hazard. He's like, "Damn it, there is another way out." Okay. So he goes up there and then terrifies the truck driver and then somehow steals the truck, which is fine.
Which it is made fine. Perfect sense. It made perfect sense. They got out of the truck. He goes inside, locks the doors, yeah. and then tries to figure out the car. And he does. It's not that hard. Dory directs him.
Yeah, exactly. Easy. This truck had the A113 as the license plate.
Oh, that's fine. Of course, they get they start going, and Dory's like, "Listen, she keeps seeing the same sand over and over again." And it turns out they are stuck in the worst thing ever, which is a roundabout. The most confusing thing. And they have them all. Oh, Kevin, they're going to tell you all the people from England.
Oh, all of them.
Oh, jolly governor, roundabouts are great. They're the fucking second coming of everything, right? And I'm just like, we master the four-way stop. Why can't you? Mm-hmm. We don't need a roundabout. We got a four-way
stop.
We
had a lot of roundabouts by the old studio. Remember that?
Yeah, I didn't like them.
Yeah, no.
They were always confusing. There was a fountain in the middle of one of them that never worked. And I think that is just perfectly indicative of how terrible roundabouts are.
The roundabouts in Italy, though, Naples specifically, are terrifying. Insane. Tim, terrifying. They don't got lanes in Naples. Lanes. It's just a big road. And they're like, figure it out. You define where Evan's the lane dream. Is.
There's two things in Italy that they don't have. Lanes and boundaries. Think about that for a second.
Some people don't have deodorant either.
That's a lot of people don't have deodorant there, especially the old people. I'm like, damn, you smell like a fucking old stack of prosciutto. Dory guides Hank as they drive toward the ocean, but the police set up a barricade to stop them. So Dory pulls a last ditch effort and asks Hank to absolutely fucking send it. They send that truck over the cliff, and as they do, all the fish spill out the back of the tanks, and as Dory falls, Hank grabs her and shelters her as the two plunge into the ocean below.
Did not see this scene coming
at all. She's like,
the use of the music, the use of the slow-mo, it felt very totally off.
The cops with like the guns and the barricades and like the Ty Burrell being like being like, they're fucking done. There's no way out of this. They're going to fish jail.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if you were the guy whose truck that got stolen? You were like, I can't explain what happened. I just cannot explain what happened. Back at the reef, Dory plays hide and seek with everyone during recess, and Hank is everyone's new favorite substitute teacher. Dory has to drop off, and Marlon secretly follows her to make sure she's okay. When he gets there, she's sitting at the edge of the drop-off, and Marlon sits up beside her, and she asks Marlon why he looks so worried, and he tells her she did it. Dory gets another flash of her youth. She followed the shells all the way home. She said, yeah, I did. And Marlon and Dory stare out over the shelf, and he says, it's really quite beautiful. It's really quite a view. And she says, yeah, unforgettable. And that is the end.
And then we get a cover of Unforgettable.
We do.
By Sia.
Fucking
that's who that was.
I was like, trying to figure out who that was. Yeah.
Yeah. Sia. And I love, like Nick was talking about earlier, like the recent movies of Pixar having this credit scene that is kind of just like, let's just show off some environments. Let's go crazy. I loved this one having that, but with the octopus. So it was kind of like a Where's Waldo type thing going on.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, that it transitions out of that. And then it starts in like ugly green kelp. And it slowly moves up. Did you guys watch the post-credit scene?
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Oh, okay.
I missed it.
No, oh, yeah, there's incredible. A post-credit. Yeah. Oh, so it slowly moves up. And I didn't realize what, like, because there's all these beautiful fishes all swimming around. And it's the outside of the marine place that they were at with all the fishes that now are living there.
Yeah.
Hanging out. And then what just do we going. See? We see all the fishes from the first movie still in their bags. Well, trying to figure out
them. Their bags are shitty as hell. And they're just rolling at the top.
Except for this little shrimp. His bag, perfectly clean.
Love it.
Damn it, I missed it. Fuck it. Hold on, I'm watching it right now. Everyone, pause the movie.
It was very good. They have like, I think it's one throwaway line of like, we're almost there. Where?
Then what happens, Kev? The camera like looks over. And it's Gerald, his sitting dumb on ass. He pops up and the camera zooms into the little circle with some like music. And it's like, what the fuck?
He sneaked his way in there, dude. Yeah.
Fucking Gerald. Look at his.
Nick, you really missed out. It was made for you.
I literally have it up in front of me right now. And Gerald is always trying to put his fucking little paw there. Get off.
His little head just pops up.
real quick, this movie ended and I was like, yeah, it was really cool. I really enjoyed it, but I was bummed that I didn't see anything with Willem Dafoe and that gang. So honestly, it was such a big deal for me to see them and like, they'll get out of the bags eventually.
This is terrifying. Why are they still in these bags?
Well, the good news is if they're there, they're going to get picked up soon and quarantined. And
they do get picked up in the end scene.
Yeah. So good for them. All right. Good for them. Hopefully things take a very happy turn in Finding Nemo 3.
Or hot whatever, ass kill.
Whenever that happens.
Who's going to get lost this time?
Seven syllables in the middle, five first last line. If you're not poetic, no need to credit. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku and review. Haiku and review. There we go.
Andy.
I knew the lyrics. Do you know, Kevin? Go.
Do I know what?
The lyrics.
Ragu.
Lyrics of what?
Haiku and review.
Ragu.
He nailed it.
You go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your haiku reviews. Nobody did that. Nobody did that this week for Finding Dory, but somebody did write in a Science with Kev fact for you. Ooh. That I'm going to read. Clownfish are all born male. The most dominant clownfish in the group will change its sex to female.
I don't like
and
where
the
this
next,
is going to
go. The next dominant male will become its mate. Given that Coral died in the first movie, Marlin would be next in line to become the female, leaving Nemo to become her mate.
See?
Things may take a dark turn in the third movie of the Nemo franchise.
Damn. Yeah.
There's just some like animal facts that we don't need to bring out when it comes to these movies.
That's true. So that's what I got there. But now it's time for Ragu Bagu.
Ragu. Andy got bit by snakes. Bagu. What's up, everyone? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here for Pixar in Review. This is yet another one that doesn't have a bad guy. I don't even know if you'd say there is any antagonist in this whatsoever.
I say for this one, we just put a big NA on there. N-A, not applicable.
How do you feel about that, Tim? I don't know. I can't think of anything.
Anything.
Joe, is there anything that you could think is like a antagonistic force in this other than getting lost?
Yeah, I mean.
I'm with y'all. I think it's N-A, and I also think that Joy from Inside Out is the same thing, but I got beat out by that. Joy and
well,
San
we're going to put an asterisk on this. We're going to say this one's actually going to be getting that feeling of getting lost in a mall. Is
okay.
The bad guy.
Is it getting lost in a mall or is it like store. Getting because I feel like it's like getting after you leave the mall and then you have to remember where you parked and it's like oh fuck
that's true. I was just like, remember when you were a child you were a child and you just couldn't see over the racks and you got lost and you thought the world's gonna end even though you were only gone for like 15 seconds and they had to call your mom over the loudspeaker and you were so nervous but you were also so excited that you were like you got found again. That's this feeling.
Did you ever have that situation? Like, I feel like I always found my mom. And we always ran through the racks.
So now it's time to rank the Pixar movies. Kevin, could you please bring up
the rankings?
I think that's up to date.
So currently, number one, we have Up. Number two, Monsters, Inc. Number three, Finding Nemo. Number four, The Incredibles. Number five, WALL-E. Number six, Toy Story 3. Number seven, Inside Out. Number eight, Toy Story 2. Number nine, Toy Story 4. Number 10, Toy Story 1. Number 11, Luca. Number 12, Ratatouille. Number 13, Monsters University. Number 14, Cars 1. Number 15, A Bug's Life. Number 16, Good Dinosaur. Number 17, Brave. Number 18, Cars 2. I'm going to start. I am going to say number 16. So beating out Good Dinosaur.
Wow.
That's low.
That's so low.
Oh, you think it's low?
It's way too low.
So low. Really? Let me
make the argument here. So Monsters University, I think, is a way stronger sequel than this was. So the pound for pound, Monsters Uni goes above for me. And I really like Cars. And I think Cars is a great standalone movie. Cars 1. The story it tells is great. The supporting cast is great. Not a perfect film. That's why it's number 14 on this list. But wow. I think there's something special there. Bug's Life, I would rather rewatch any day of the week over a lot of these. But that only goes so far. I think the quality of the movie does suffer a bit, not only for how old it is, but it does lack the Pixar stuff that we like so much for the most part. But I do think that it is a better put together film than Good Dinosaur, because that, despite having a lot more positives than I expected, did have a lot of flaws that didn't add up to being something too great.
Yeah, see, I feel like I would have gone way higher. To me, it's a number 7. I would put it over Inside Out. Yeah, I really like this movie. And it would do, like, honestly, I like it more than Finding Nemo, but, like, you can't, Finding Nemo, like, has to exist. I don't know. I can see why Finding Nemo is a better like film. This is just so much funner. But yeah, I guess I would put it in number 7.
Bob, Toy Story 2.
Back and forth.
And Toy Story 1.
Yeah. Oh. I go back and forth because my initial thing is I want to put it at 14 above Cars, but I also think it's better than Luca, so I wouldn't be mad if we put it at 11.
See,
I think I like Ratatouille Monsters University better, but it's just that weird thing about the list.
That's my thing too. Is like I'm with Joey on this one. We're like, I think Ratatouille is a better movie, but I think this is better than Luca. So I'm torn as to whether which god I want to appease on this one. But I would probably put it underneath Ratatouille, I think, at number 13 for me.
Joey, lock in your answer.
I'm going to put it at 11.
So
what did Andy say?
Andy
doesn't get to vote. He got bit by
on vacation and he did not end up watching it yet. So we're going to have to. I didn't expect our numbers to be all over the board like this. So we need to wait for Andy Cortez to return. Ooh. To see where the rankings go. But I have our rankings locked in. Kevin, number 7. Nick at 13. Me at 16. Joey at 11. We will return in a couple days with Cars 3. In Pixar in review. And then a couple days after that, it's Suicide Squad time, baby. But until
we
then.
We talked about what we're doing after that.
Yeah, aliens, let's talk about it probably. Now. We haven't talked
because
about it yet.
Because people on the subreddit were freaking out that we were going to do Coco without Andy. So I want to make sure people know.
No, don't worry. We will make sure we do Coco with Andy. That's not even a fucking question. He loves that movie way too much.
So good.
But after that, we are actually going to take a break for a little mini in review. We're going to do Don't Breathe in review. We've got some special guests lined up for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Don't Breathe, a horror movie. The sequel is coming out August 13th, I want to say. So the plan there will be the week of August 9th. Tuesday, we will release Don't Breathe Part 1. Friday, we will release Don't Breathe Part 2. Tell a full little fun story. I personally loved the first one when I saw it a couple years ago, so I'm excited for all of this. So for your homework for the next couple weeks, you got Cars 3, you got Suicide Squad, then you got Don't Breathe 1 and 2. God, then we'll have to figure some things out. Perfect. But until then, love you all. Goodbye.